Accession number 6820, reel number 3.
Mr. Mackenzie, reel 3. Why did you think the Chasseurs Alpins were so good?
Because they seemed to me to be very well-disciplined troops, very keen on the job they were doing. What we heard of their activities was that they were moving in on the attempted breakthrough and carving out batches of the Germans, driving them towards their own men and bringing them in. They seemed, the tanks which were roaring up and down the road outside the position that we were holding were full of beans, and much cheering was going on.
They were what?
Full of beans.
Full of beans. Did you actually see any of the fighting at Sedan?
No, beyond the noise of the guns, beyond the fact that we could see one stage of the day, parachute has been dropped away on our right front. We didn't undertake any of the fighting ourselves, and we didn't see it beyond what was actually the outskirts of it, the road which ran past our position. That was at a little place called Grand Pré on the Sedan, G-R-A-N-D-P-R-E, with an acute, I think it is.
Where did you go to after Sedan?
During the course of the day, the company commander came along with the pay, explained the position to us, said that we were there to hold, to help the French hold the position until a new division arrived to undertake the closing of the gap. We were to move off at night, which we did. We moved, I think we moved across the Seine, the Aisne, during the course of the night, and we arrived just as dawn was breaking at a place called Vouziers. This was a town which was deserted and had been attacked from the air. There was numerous bomb holes in the town and surrounding area. We were allowed to lie down for a while in below the bushes and the walls of the village, and then marched to get onto a train which had obviously been taking French troops of the new division into that position. We were put aboard this train. My platoon supplied an anti-aircraft detachment and one of the open trucks, and we set off.
Did you know where you were heading for? Had you been told?
You never were told where you were going to. You had the opportunity of surmising. In fact, earlier the company commander said we were going into reserve behind Paris. That wasn't me. We moved from Vouziers in a southerly direction through the Chateau country by Montages, through Orléans to Rouen, up north to Rouen. We spent some time at Orléans. We had 2 or 3 hours there when I managed to buy some beer and bread for our particular outfit, and a copy of the Continental Daily Mail. Now, just at that time, things were looking very bleak for the Allies. The Dutch had surrendered, apparently. The Belgians had packed in. And the French were having a pummeling round the Maginot. We moved off from there and soon realised that we were not going to get the rest behind Paris that we'd been promised. We kept going on our trucks until we got through Rouen and pulled up at a little town called Neufchâtel-en-Bray, on the New Châtel on the River Bray. We detrained, moved out of the town, and were hoping to find a meal there, but although our transport had arrived by road, we found that our own supply truck, cookhouse equipment had been given away by one of the cooks en route to the refugees. All the food supply had. We were condemned to the eternal bouillon biscuits. At last, we had a long column of French buses and with military drivers pull up. We embussed and moved forward in the direction of Abbeville. At least we saw the notices to Abbeville on the side of the road. We went quite a few kilometres and pulled into at a crossroads a forest. We called it generally Blangy Forest, but I think its real name is the Haute Forêt d'Eau. We were quickly in the shelters of the wood, ordered to dig slit trenches and prepare defensive positions there. The following day, we had our commanding officer's order room when most of the full ranks who had been in charge of trucks were on the peg for allowing the men to hold to dangle their legs out of the trucks en route, thus proving that the British soldiers would be moved around. That done, we were given details of the next move and what had happened. Apparently, the Germans had pushed through and they were on the way, close to the channel ports at that moment. The Germans had thrown a bridgehead over at Abbeville, south of Abbeville, and the French, under General de Gaulle, were attempting to squeeze in this bridgehead back across the River Somme. We were the 51st Scottish Division, or Highland Division at that time, were ordered to go up to assist the French troops in throwing back this bridgehead. The 4th Seaforth had gone forward, the 4th Cameron in support, and we were to go forward on the next morning, the next day, which we did. We passed through Blangy. I think it's on the River Meuse. There was a town which was practically deserted of civilian population at that time. We moved forward, marched all day long. A thing that I noticed particularly on that day was the number of our own aircraft in the air above our heads. Sometimes engaged in duels with the German Messerschmitts. These were the last planes we were to see in any real numbers. We halted at a place which I think was called Huppy, H-U-P-P-E with an accent. We stayed there for the night, moved off the following morning on this continual marching, and pulled into another little village, passing a captured German ammunition wagon on the way into the village. The presence of Germans so close at hand made us very alert, to say the least. The guns were rumbling away to our front. We were ordered to occupy a series of pigeon lofts and hen houses and huts in that particular village. And I had got my men established there when one of the other platoon sergeants came in to say that we had to pack up at once and move forward. It appears that the French, continuing the attack, had failed to hold a village that they'd captured and had been driven out, and that we had to go forward one day earlier than we expected in order to restore the position. We marched all night long, all the rest of that night, and came at dawn through a small village called Moninville and turned right towards one of the little orchard villages which are typical of that area. Place we found out was called Bienfay, B-I-E-N-F-A-Y, or... As we approached this village, we could see in the dead ground on our left the tops of, obviously, Versailles Wood. We didn't know it, but it was at that time held by the Germans. As we neared the wood to our front, we could see a lot of activity in the shape of tanks being refueled, ready for the day's work. These were French tanks. We deployed and moved forward. Very fortunate we didn't get in the neck from the French who were holding that position. We got into the shelter of the wood in front. My company commander said, go and find out if you can what's happening here. I found a French sergeant and what was left of his section, I suppose about 15 men, and I had a chat with him. It appears that he belonged to the De Gaulle Division Motorisé and had been already 15 days in this particular attack. That they'd been doing very well until they'd encountered masses of Jerries in the wood on our left, had been driven out. They were very pleased to see British troops, this particular outfit, who were, as I may mention again, an exception to the rule. They were very good troops, which most of those people who trained with De Gaulle turn out to be. I reported, the sergeant in charge asked that we should be very careful if we continued the attack in the wood, that because he'd lost several of his men in that wood. I was hoping that they'd make their way out. We moved into the wood, turned left, and moved down to the other side of this little wooded village to take up our own platoon positions. 13, 14 and 15. My platoon was 15. I had to look after a road into the village where I posted my anti-tank rifle and a series of, they were just slits dug by the Frenchmen. Our own troops got to work immediately and fixed up slit trenches.
When they're satisfied with the French dugouts?
French slits were not Tommy's idea of a good investment at all. And of course, before we could get our own platoon trucks up, they scouted around and got various shovels and spades, many of them with long, long handles, very difficult to manage. However, the lads weren't very long in getting themselves halfway to Australia. And they were encouraged in this work by a sudden bout of mortar fire from the other side of the wood, from the Germans. I think three or four Frenchmen were wounded by this salvo as they moved off, very glad to have the prospect of some relief, a bit of rest. Of course, from then it was routine with saying that every man knew his job, that we dug and provided what protection we could for ourselves, that we managed to get our meals prepared, that whatever happened, we had a wash and a shave every day, that we could manage to get the water to shave with. It was amazing in many ways the way these men behaved, because most of them, a very high proportion, were first and second militia boys who had never had any intention of soldiering, and who were now real veterans because they'd been scrapping away for weeks without any real chance of having proper baths, proper change of clothing. And above all else, they were cheerful and looking forward to having a proper relief, rest, a proper relief away from the battle area. My own duties, of course, at that time, I was a platoon sergeant of 15 with a platoon sergeant major in charge, an old friend called Davy Hollis. We worked very well together and understood each other. He was taken off on a reconnaissance party to the other side of the wood, and returned with the news that we were to continue the attack. The division was now established in the area and was continue the attack on the 4th of June 1940, the early hours of the morning, when the very last day of the evacuation of Dunkirk was to take place. This no doubt was additional cover for the last day of the evacuation. The object was, of course, still to push in this bridgehead, which has daily been strengthened by the Jerry on the south side of the Somme, south of Abbeville. The early hours of the morning of the 4th, my platoon, leaving the spare tripods in charge of the, or under the charge of the cycle orderly, Stevenson, moved to the other side of the village, down and across a little valley, a sunken road, to take over the position which was occupied in a very close wood by D Company of my regiment. We had to get into position before 3:30, which we did. I placed the three sections, one on the overlooking the sunken road, another in the centre of the wood, and last position on the facing the open space in front of us, the fields looking towards Abbeville, at the edge of our own wood. I paused for a moment when I got my men into position to watch the jump off, and the men there of D Company were lying or kneeling in rows, whilst French medium tanks were moving in circles in front of them, ready to move off. A whistle and off they went, disappearing over the hill in front, over the top of the slope. They made a very brave show. I returned to our own position and was there when I just reached the platoon headquarters when the counter barrage was thrown over. Our own barrage, I might say, had been quite the noisiest experience in my life up to that moment. The Germans carried on. They must have had a pretty rude shock in the first place, but they soon recovered, and from all round our position, the odd stray shots were coming into us. Very, very difficult to distinguish from what direction they were coming. In fact, the one stage I was confident there was a sniper up a tree, and there was quite a lot of lead went into that sniper before it got light enough to discover we were shooting at a bunch of mistletoe which was growing out of one of the trees in this particular copse. We discovered that a French voltigeur, that's a sort of medium machine gunner, was taking pot shots at us from across the other side of his valley. He continued to do so until we had a pot at him when he packed up.
What nationality was he?
A Frenchman. Voltigeur, that's a French machine gunner.
Firing at you?
Yeah, he was taking a pot at us. He may not have, probably didn't see us, but it may very well have been in all innocence, but it was just the same as if he was a German. Effectively the same. However, he didn't do any material damage to us, and I think a couple of warning shots was enough for him. The day wore on. First, the news was good. The men had reached their initial positions, the first positions, and had dug in, and we heard that they'd put up a wonderful show quite close to our own position on the open space. The French medium tanks had taken a fearful mauling. They 88, we'd heard so much about the German anti-aircraft, anti-tank, field gun, a sort of triple-purpose weapon, was just becoming talked about. And apparently it had done a lot of damage to the French. Tanks were burning. I counted 12 right out in the fields in front of us that had been holed by these 88 shells, anti-tank shells. The platoon commander, PSM Hollis, departed for information and supplies to the where we left the company, up in the village of Bienfait. I was left in charge, and I spent my time trotting backwards and forwards between the three sections to see that they were happy in the what they were doing. With one stage of the morning, when the men of my left section reported that there was a French anti-tank column moving up with the little I suppose they were the French equivalent of our carriers, trailing guns of about, looked to me about an inch caliber, which were their main anti-tank weapon at that time. A whole column of them. Now, we were just admiring the elan of these French when a horrible screaming arose in the air above us and three Stukas arrived. This was our first actual contact with Stukas in action. They're, to us, it was a dreadful experience, and we suffered more from the noise they were making, the scream of the sirens as they dived in, followed them, each other in and down, and plastered this anti-tank column that was moving up. In another quarter of an hour, the whole wood was full of screaming, yelling Frenchmen. They